here to answer your questions about classic minis, about life, about anything. I think we're going to have a really good time tonight.
I always try and say, don't I, that my channel is about getting rid of the black art of working on minis.
For me, getting into minis, it was, I had a newer mini, a 2007 was one of the BMW minis. It was a Cooper S. And I found out about classics. I'm like, you know what? That's what I want. That's what I want.
There you are now. Hello, everybody.
Amazing.
How did I get into minis? It's something that just kind of happened from just one really good friend of mine asked me to build them. And I said, yeah, I'm doing nothing this weekend. I'll do that.
Man, it's funny how quickly things can change.
It's awesome to have so much really good fun chat with you all. And
yep, that's the best part. I'd really like to make this a regular thing.
Thank you to everybody again, and thanks for tuning in.
Thanks, everyone, and you know the drill. Enjoy those minis.
See you guys on the next one.
All righty. Welcome, everybody, to the next episode of Let's Talk Shit with Paul and Cole and our special guest, Turbo Phil from TurboMini.com. It is a pleasure to have you today, Phil.
No worries. Cheers, Cole.
Hello, Phil.
Hello, and everybody. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you.
So, no, pretty exciting stuff. Yeah, no technical glitches so far, but the night is still young. Very exciting stuff today. We've got three different people streaming from three different countries across the world. It's very cool stuff. Wild and crazy. And we will be asking quite a few different questions of Mr. Turbo Phil here. Hopefully we won't be too hard on you, but we do have some good ones for the viewers. And then after that, we will be taking questions in our normal Q&A segment.
Hello, so, Mini Performance Rich.
Yeah, got a few people joining in here. William Murphy, Turbo Cooper Sport, Mr. Steve.
I see Eduardo.
Mm-hmm, Eduardo, the DJSE. Welcome, welcome.
Welcome, welcome. Cole, aren't you from the UK? Yes, it's that accent that gives it away every time.
Yeah, isn't it? That's probably what it is. It's all of my... that British accent I definitely have.
Oh man, yeah. We were trying to teach you one earlier, weren't we? What did we say? What was your intro?
Oh yeah, I forget now. what's the show? Show the...
What's the story? Was it? What's the story?
What's
was
the
it?
Story? Is that something what's that you say in the UK too, Phil? What's the story?
No.
No.
What's the story?
No, personally.
Yeah, how what's do you greet people story? when you show up?
Hey up, mate!
Is that what yeah. It is? How do?
Just how do?
You just throw tea bags at them, right?
Oh yeah,
all the time.
Yeah, our American intros or salutations are more. They say "dude" a lot more. Dude. There's at least six or seven dudes in there. Like, what's up, dude? How you doing, dude?
Hey, dude. All right, dude.
Oh, man.
How's your dude
not,
doing,
not one
dude?
Of these.
But I think we're going to have a really good time tonight. Lots of really cool questions. Thank you for everyone who has joined. I am going to hand it off to Mr. Paul to start us off getting into the meat and potatoes of our conversation here.
Alrighty, well, yes, I suppose we should start by throwing questions at you, Mr. Phil. Now, I had an interesting one actually earlier on, and I'm going to just land you with this now. Now, we'd been talking, a customer actually in the north of Ireland messaged me, and he was asking me about 998 turbo builds, you know, small bore turbo builds. And he was like, is there kind of any pitfalls or, you know, what do we need to think about? And the one that came up, and I know we probably had loads of conversations about this before over on Turbo Minis like 100 years ago, but has there been any like move on pistons for small bore? Like, what are people using? What is the piston of choice now? Or do you know it? But small bore.
Well, there was Graham Russell in Australia was doing a lot of small bar pistons that were high quality cast piston. I think Keith Calver was selling those.
Oh yeah,
they're pretty solid. I know a few people that are using them without issue.
Mm. Yeah, and they come. They're using like the Hastings ring pack, right?
I think so. Yeah. And Swift Tune do some forged small bar pistons as well, don't they?
Yeah, yeah. I think they were probably. I see MED have small bore forged as well. I presume they're all probably going to be flat top though, right?
Yeah, but if there's enough depth in the crown, I presume there'll be substantial amount of material you'll be able to dish them out.
We could hog them out. Yeah, it's yeah.
Not as much of an issue on the small bar motors getting the compression down anyway, is it? As it is on the larger displacements.
Yeah, so like maybe even flat top with like with the 12G295 head maybe, and you'll
yeah,
get
exactly. I think if you have flat tops and a standard 295, it's about 8.5:1 compression as it is.
Yeah, like nowadays with the kind of cams we run and stuff, that's probably going to work out even fine. And you know what? It'd probably be better if you could keep a flat top piston in there because it's going to be more reliable, right? It's going to be a stronger piston.
Yeah, yeah. More material you've got on there, yeah, the more heat you can take away, and it's going to be stronger, isn't it? Yeah,
that'd actually be interesting. So, yeah, there we go. Yeah, 9 and 8 small bore build. I wonder what the guys used. You know, they built that, was it Specialist Components with that new supercharger, that one, and they used your man AC Dodd's cam. I wonder what pistons they used.
Yeah, I did see that, but I couldn't tell you what they'd used in that.
It seems so with to perform that pretty well.
Do you think that it's like absolutely necessary then for a 998 to have forged pistons? You know, it's something that we always seem to be pushing people towards with the larger bore versions of the A-Series. But, you know, can you get away with die-cast pistons now on a boosted build if you're running maybe a lower compression ratio or, you know, someone who might not have the cash to buy a set of forged pistons because they tend to be a little bit more expensive?
Oh, yeah, definitely for sure. A decent cast piston, like for generally for road use, is 99% of the time is more than adequate.
Mm-hmm.
I run cast pistons myself, not had any issues at like £20 a boost on the road and stuff. I guess if you're track racing it and it's flat out for a prolonged time and the heat's going to build up and what have you, then you probably err on the side of forge. But for road use, unless you're driving it like you stole it 100% of the time, then I'd say a decent cast piston is probably more than adequate,
That's really cool. That's good to know.
I suppose as long as you're controlling detonation, then, you know, cast piston, forged piston, it's kind of going to be much
well, if you can control the heat, and nothing's going to survive detonation, is it? Well, you know, forged piston might survive a tiny bit
compared to
a cast piston, but you get proper detonation and whatever you've got in it, it's going to die in it. Decent cast pistons, like the Omegas and stuff that I run, they're a decent quality thing. But even some of the like standard pistons, the Metro Turbo piston for a factory piston is brilliant. I run them for years. Yeah.
Were those forged or were those die cast?
No, they're just a die cast piston, yeah.
Interesting.
And they're really good, yeah.
Huh. Yeah. Well, that's good to know. You touched on compression ratio there, you know. One of the questions that I actually had was kind of like, there was this kind of historical knowledge, especially on the Turbo Mini forum, that, you know, is all about kind of very low compression when compared to modern cars and their kind of compression ratio that they're running. Even my build that I'm doing right now is like an 8.1:1. More modern, you know, ECUs, these things, does that allow us maybe to kind of up that compression ratio, that base compression ratio? And, you know, what do you feel like you would be comfortable with on a new build?
Well, it's entirely dependent, isn't it? But the better you can control the heat. So, I mean, if you've got a standard engine, if you've got no intercooler, let's like a worst case scenario, you've got no intercooler, you've got a hot climate, you've got a distributor, and you've got a carburetor, then you've got pretty much the worst of everything, haven't you? but then if you upgrade to mappable ignition that's properly controlled, you put a decent intercooler on there, you stick water methanol injection in it, you put fuel injection on it that's all properly controlled, then it's the opposite end of the scale, isn't it?
So I feel like you just described every single A series turbo that was made by the factory there, Phil.
It runs 7 PSI.
and even they blew up.
Well, nobody wants to run 7 PSI, do they?
No.
Maybe for the first start.
Yeah.
On 7 PSI idle, maybe.
Taking over. I think for boost, for compression ratio, like you said, you're gonna have to think about just every aspect. I mean, if you look at a really well, if you look at the setup you have now, Cole, you know, you've got a very good quality intercooler, you've got really good mapped ignition kit, and okay, you're still running a carburetor, so I suppose how your fueling is, but then, you know, with a carburetor, you're always going to probably fuel a lot on the richer side of things anyway. So it's going to keep everything cool enough too. So yeah, you could probably afford to go a bit more compression with the setup you have and maybe make it a bit nicer down low.
You're in a hot climate though, aren't you?
Yeah. In the summer, it's hotter than hell here.
Compared to, I'd imagine, what most of the weather me and Paul get.
Yeah. I think midsummer of this year, we were kind of peaking out at like 40, 41 degrees Celsius and like 100% humidity. Yeah, it's brutal.
So even, that's our oven coal.
Yeah. I have a sneaky intercooler hanging off to the side here, actually, for
I don't know. There was a couple of guys running kind of, I think, I'm trying to think of who now, but a couple of guys over on TurboMaze are running kind of 9 to 1 and stuff like that now, right? Reasonably successful.
Yeah, there's people running higher than that. I mean, if you've got like, with modern ECUs, with like knock detection and stuff on that can back the timing off, and you know, you've got proper control over stuff, there's no reason you can't run a higher compression if your turbo's efficient and you're monitoring charge temps. If you've got an ECU that will monitor charge temps, it'll back the timing off for high charge temps, it'll back off the knock and etc. etc. If you've got the more control you have over it, the more you can push things, can't you?
Yeah, totally.
I mean, back in the day, everyone was on a clockwork dizzy and a single carb, weren't they? So putting the compression to like 8 to 1 was probably a sensible idea.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. And people didn't even have wideband fitted, did they? I mean, it's only a few years ago that wideband was like. Yeah. Rev it up, go for a drive, take the spark plug out. Oh, yeah, that's all right.
Yeah. Ooh, that's a bit white.
Yeah, I'm over here getting ready to wire in my Lambda sensor to my ECU just so that I can change and monitor that stuff. Like, I can't even imagine.
The ECU can compensate for that. Your mixture is too lean. It'll back the timing off, et cetera, et cetera. It'll compensate. It'll put more fuel in if you're running fuel injection.
Exactly.
So things have moved on a lot, haven't they?
Comment there from Turbo Cooper Sports. Hello again, Steve. He's just saying that Gavin Wilkinson there is running like 10 to 1 on a standard MPI with 15 pounds of boost. Wow.
Yeah, I've seen that, yeah.
Yeah, he's running that VEMES thing.
I don't even know what that is. VEMS?
Yeah.
Do you know what that is?
That's like a type of programmable controller, right? It's like it to replace old MEMS. Yeah. It replaces the original MEMS, right? I'm sure Turbo Cooper Spurt? Turbo Cooper
Spurt. Easy for you to say.
No, I just had to go. I was trying to say it in America for you, Cole. That was what I was doing there. Yeah. Turbo Cooper Spurt.
Turber.
It's a blowy wishy wooser thing. Yep, there you go. I think that's a yep, I'm right. It's a replacement for in Dutch. Sounded more like Dutch, all right. Yeah. Yes, the turbo cooler short. Yes. nice. Alrighty. Yeah, so I had a question that I wanted to put to you. Cams, what are people running now, Phil? I know, you know, the old Avonbar Phase 2 was the cam of choice for everybody 5 years ago, or maybe a little bit more than that, but what are people doing these days?
I don't think there's still a lot of option straight off the shelf. You can go on a custom ground route, but the phase two is like a well-trodden path. Yeah, it certainly works especially well in the big bar stuff.
That's what I'm going to be running.
So yeah, short and duration, high lift, wide lob center angle, exactly what you want, really.
Yeah. And it seems to be that. So you'd be kind of questioning whether it would be interesting. I wonder if that's what they did with the, you know, your AC Dodd and Bash's components. Well, they made another cam for that Boost D998. I wonder if that's what they did. They've just taken a modern profile and opened out the LCA on it.
Yeah, I do not know whether it's the same as one of his other profiles. And yeah, they just widened the lobe center angle on it.
Yeah. And because they all seem to be really, all those cams seem to be really fast lifting, right? They seem to be really quick and
yeah.
Early door
lifting. Short duration, that seems to be what the A series likes.
Mm. Yeah. And speed it up. I see, I wonder whether it'd be interesting to see whether, some of these, very fast opening kind of profiles, what it'd be, you know, where they, you see some of the guys run these bigger cam followers now and run these really fast.
I was going to say that's the only limitation, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
With the small follower, you can only open it so quickly, can't you? But I think there's people, there's people boring and fitting larger followers. A bit more.
Yeah, that's the really guy, what's that guy in Calver, isn't it? Keith Calver. He's selling now at like those big followers. Yeah. I did a motor here last year, a 1293 with one of those, a road one, when we bored out the followers for the bigger followers. What a pain in the ass that job is. But anyway,
what followers do you use?
He Instagram. Got them made, I think.
You got to have a certain amount because you got to take from all the time.
It felt like baiting a few of them in there already at one stage. It takes about 2 minutes to board them out and about 3 weeks to set the bloody block up in the milling machine. But I think it'd be. It'd be interesting to see like some of those modern, big, very fast opening profiles on a Boosty engine, just to see, get it in there early. See what I reckon it just make more torque, right?
Yeah, it'd be better to go with more lift on the cam than it would with the rockers as well, really. Because using the higher ratio rockers, obviously it gives more lift at any given point, but then it gives more lift on the overlap point. Which is what you don't want. Mm. Which is what you don't want on the turbo engine.
Boosties.
So,
interesting. Well, I'm glad I went with 1.3s then.
it depends on your exhaust back pressure in the manifold. So you basically don't want any. You want minimal or very little overlap, because you can actually see higher pressure in your exhaust manifold than you can in your intake manifold. So you could
really.
You could have whatever 30 psi in your exhaust manifold and only 15 psi coming in. And then on the overlap, you'll actually get reversion. So your exhaust will actually be coming back into the cylinder because it's of a higher pressure than the incoming charge. So
interesting.
The more efficient your exhaust turbine, the more efficient that is, the better that flows, the more you can head towards a normally aspirated cam. So the more a standard, cam that works well in a normally aspirated engine would work well in a turbo if the turbo's super efficient. But obviously the little turbos that most of the minis and stuff are using are only quite small, so they're going to be quite restrictive. So like I say, if you have the higher pressure in the exhaust than you do in the inlet, then you get the reversion. So that's why you want minimal overlap. So fitting highly for rockers just gives you more lift at any given point, but including more lift at overlap. So if you've got the valve more open at overlap, you're going to get more exhaust coming in if you've got the pressure in the exhaust there. So that's what you're trying to avoid, basically.
Do you know what? That's really interesting, Phil. It's I never gave consideration to the fact I'm literally thinking this now, that you've got that turbo in the way, so you've never got pressure in the manifold, right? Yeah, never thought of that. Because in the normally aspirated world, it's just a hole to outside, really, you know, and you're not going to get pressure in there, right?
Not really. Yeah, if you've got a decent exhaust system on a normally aspirated engine and a decent flowing manifold, there's going to be minimal
virtually no back pressure in there at all, really, isn't it? Probably when it's really scavenging, there's going to be a vacuum, essentially, isn't
there? Vacuum, Whereas if you've got a big dirty turbo in the way, it's like a pressure block.
Yeah, or a small dirty turbo. And it funnels down, doesn't it, in the volute into a tiny little hole if you have a looking one, where the turbine is. Yeah, so that's a restriction. Yeah. So if you're chucking 15 PSI, but you've got 30 PSI of pressure in there, you've obviously got an opposition there.
Yeah, because you would always...
Go ahead.
Go on.
Okay, so it's really interesting because this is something that I've been reading about and talking to actually Turbo Cooper Sport a good bit about. It's that size of the exhaust, and that especially, and maybe you can help validate this too, but especially at higher RPMs where you're generating a lot of exhaust, the restriction of your exhaust pipe and the diameter of that pipe is what's going to prevent you from getting more power at higher RPM, if I understood it correctly.
Your exhaust needs to not be basically, you do want, it's obviously all a balancing act like everything is building an engine, but you do want a higher pressure on the engine side of your turbine, and you want a low pressure on the outside of the turbine, so basically your downpipe wants to be as big as possible, and you need pressure the other side to drive the turbine. If you've got not much pressure here, it's not going to spin the turbine. So you want a good pressure differential across the turbine. So yeah, big exhaust on it and a high speed gas at the other side. So that's why you'll generally see a turbo exhaust manifolds will be, the piping will be smaller than it possibly would for a normally aspirated engine. Keep the gas speed high, get that turbine spinning. And then that's why you see people use huge downpipes and huge exhaust systems on turbos where you wouldn't on a normally aspirated engine. If you
get that out.
Yeah, if you fit a 3-inch exhaust to your 1275 normally aspirated engine, it would be absolutely awful because you'd get exhaust reversion because you'd have no scavenging effect. But you fit an inch and a quarter exhaust onto your turbo, and it's the gases just ain't going to be able to get out there. And you don't get any scavenging on your exhaust pipe whether you've got a turbo anyway. So you just basically want minimal back pressure after your turbine. So you just run as big a downpipe as you can get down past that damn pot joint.
There's just no room back there.
There isn't a lot.
Oh man, it is tight.
Had to clearance the subframe a little bit for mine, and you got to wiggle it in just the right direction. What size exhaust are you running on your car? Bless you.
There's a bit of a, if you use one of the later subframes, the injection ones, it actually moves the engine, I think it's about 20 mil further forward.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
That gives you a bit more, but then you've got less for your intercooler and stuff at the front.
That's really interesting. I didn't know that they were farther forward like that.
We run them on the race cars because we use those big LCBs, you know, the long center branch jobs, and they actually they have they're now nearly 2 inches. So when they bigger hammer, you need to take it to the bulkhead. That's the problem. We need to get that room in there as well. So, but yeah, we don't have to worry about a big bloody intercooler at the front. So, I suppose. Yeah.
Well, I have an interesting question for you, Paul, Phil. Too many P names. You guys are mixing me up. So as you probably maybe know, I am obviously building a turbo engine right now, and I'm very close to, I know, surprise everybody. I'm very close to the first start.
You're really close now.
Yeah. Hopefully this coming weekend. I was curious what you might say are some top tips aside from the kind of common things that you would be doing on a normally aspirated A-series. What should I be looking out for when I first start my engine with a turbo on it specifically? Are there any special considerations or am I overthinking it?
Generally, most of the engine, just everything you would consider with your normal aspirated engine to start up, make sure you've got oil pressure and stuff. But with your turbo, I'd keep the oil feed line off the turbo when you crank it. Make sure you've got oil flow through your line when you crank for oil pressure. Make sure you've got some, put it in a jar or whatever. Make sure you've got some oil coming out of that. You don't want to be starting that up with no oil feed. And then obviously make sure you've got the drains on properly and everything on the turbo. So that'd be, make sure you've got, certainly that you've got an oil feed to it before you go firing it up.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I've read some things about people either running like actuator pressure to start off with, so not using any sort of boost controller fiddling with that base pressure, just going with what the turbo has built into it from the factory. Is that something that you would recommend as well, or turn it on up?
No, well, certainly before you drive it, be setting the boost, the wastegate either open or to something minimum. Yeah, you don't want to be going down the street and then suddenly hitting 20 psi at the road end here. So.
Yeah, no big deal. Just engine out the bottom of my car as I'm driving down the neighborhood. I'm sure my neighbors would love that.
Yeah, no, generally you just see sparks coming out the exhaust, and that is thousands of euros.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you've got $1. Get a wide band fitted or whatever, but if you're going to plan on driving it yourself before you actually get it set up anywhere, get a working wide band in it. Well, certainly before you see any boost anyway.
Yeah, yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
I mean, for what a wide band costs, I'd say it's pretty essential.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah.
I wouldn't run an engine without one now, really.
Yeah, I've got mine. When I got the downpipe built up, I'm not a welder, so I had to outsource my welding and got Fusion Fabs to build up my kit for me. Had him put a bung on there just from the get-go, run that wide band. It makes tuning so much easier. So much easier.
Yeah, I mean, even if you're not going to tune it yourself, you can at least see if it's running dangerously lean or stupidly rich.
Yep. And, yep.
At least you can turn. If all you can do is turn it off, it's at least it's better than driving it. Yeah.
Yep.
Lift off.
Yeah.
Someone asked me recently, "What do I do if I see crazy lean figures on my wideband? Take your foot off the throttle, please." Please lift, for the love of God, lift.
Tell us a little bit about I'm actually really curious. I don't know the full spec and information about your car these days, Phil. What are you running, or what are you maybe building right now on your own personal car?
Ooh, it's all a massive secret, can't tell anybody.
Okay
Not all.
That's Phil's way of saying he hasn't taken the cover off the car in 8 years, so he doesn't actually know.
not 8 years, but probably about two.
All right. Okay, that's fair enough.
Well, it's in a million pieces at the minute because I'm on with altering it, but it. So do you want what it was or what it's going to be?
I think let's go with what it's going to be.
It's going to be. Yeah. Right. Well, yeah. it's still a five-part. Okay. There is fuel injection to go on it. I've got, ooh, it's currently running megajolt, so ignition side only, which it's been running for ages. But I have got mega squirt to go on it to go with the injection. So that's nice. At some point. But I'm just going to get it running on the carb again because there's a lot of stuff that I want to try just purely for my own interest, with porting the carb and doing a lot of other stuff. And I just want to, my mate has a dyno, so open my other friend's farm, so we basically can give him a small amount of money and do quite a lot of dyno time. So
that's awesome.
Just a lot of things that I wanted just to mess around with, really. But anyway, so yeah, it's just going to be on a cab. It's still going to be 5-port. I have got a 7-port head, but I think I've had that for about a decade, so I don't know if that's going to happen. But I'm going to do another head for it with some quite trick things in there, which, ooh, I shall keep secret for now. So yeah, nice. I want to stretch what I can out of the 5-port, stretch what I can out of the cab, then I'll go into injection. I've got a different turbo. I've got a GT2056 to go on it now, which is nothing too secret. Plenty of people running them.
Bigger turbo though.
Yeah, bigger exhaust, bigger downpipe. The rest of the engine, I'm probably going to go for a custom cam. The rest of the engine will just be what it is. It's got Carrillo rods in it, Omega pistons, straight cut box, LSD, all the usual bits and bobs.
So I feel like I remember. I am subbed to your channel, and if anyone watching is not subbed to Turbo Phil, head over to his YouTube channel, sub right now. It is awesome stuff. He has some really great deep dives on carbs, and I feel like I remember you saying you were going to be doing some water and meth injection.
There's that as well.
Is it an AEM kit that you're doing, or is it something custom?
No, it is an AM kit. Yeah, just off-the-shelf solution, isn't it?
Very cool.
It should do what I need it to do, yeah. There is a video about that. Well, first part of it. Yeah, so there's that to go on as well, which I'd forgotten about. There's basically years and years worth of parts that I've gathered in that garage to go on the car when I get round to going to get more than 5 minutes to myself to do it. Yeah.
Paul probably knows this. There's this common theme in every mechanic, every person who works on cars for a living. They never have time to work on their own cars.
And talking of it, never.
It's so sad because, you know, we're the ones that want to do it the most.
There isn't like two engines sitting over there waiting to be built since May. One of which has pistons in the gearbox somewhere, which I looked into the spark plug and seen no piston. I went, well, that's going on the shelf for 6 months.
Away it goes.
An engine but, missing a piston.
Oh, it's in there. It's just not where it should be. It's no longer the shape it should be either. We have a new Roland Road tuner. It's fine. We fixed the problem.
Oh, okay.
I have an interesting question, Phil. So, while you guys have been yattering on there, something has been going through my mind. So, this notion of back pressure in the inlet or the exhaust manifold, right, and the smaller turbo is causing that. So, you play that out and you go for a much bigger turbo. But if you go for a much bigger turbo, you get loads of lag, right? Until you get enough gas speed in there. So, why don't we get one of those little superchargers like the guys in Whatchamacall has, cram one of them on the front and go all Mercedes about the whole thing?
You could do. Packaging issues, isn't there? In there.
That's always Clubman, the issue.
Clubman front end, problem solved.
But what about those round nosers?
Someone on turbo when he did one a few years ago, supercharged and turbo. I can't remember how successful it was, but I do remember that it popped up. But
did
I've
they
seen
do a big turbo?
I obviously can't remember. It was a few years ago now, but I know somebody did do it. But and then I never heard that much about it, so I don't know how much success they had with it. But if you've got a suitably sized turbo, you can minimise lag and you can still produce a high amount of power. So it's like, do you really need to go that route? I mean, something like the GT17, it'll respond to from about 2,500 RPM all the way up to whatever 6,500 or something. You can make whatever you want. 200, it'll pull over 200 horsepower. So, do you really need anything else?
Yeah, I mean, do you want more power than that? Of course,
we
do.
Always want,
we
more,
always
power,
want
yeah.
more power.
It's never a question of too much power. It's just not enough grip, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. I think it's more down to the fact that we have chocolate underneath the engine. I think that's all of our single biggest problem, right? We've all different shades of chocolate. Some are like 50% cocoa, some are like 90, but it's still chocolate. That's the thing.
It's an interesting way to think about that.
Well, I was interested. You were over with Mr. Lyons there. I seen popped up in your Facebook. So he's got this new five crank, 500 bearing crank, and
500 bearing crank.
I don't know. So, like, go on, give a guess. What kind of power do you think he's going to try and make? I mean,
well, it's got the potential for more RPM, hasn't it? Or reliable RPM. So matched with a 16 valve head, which will has the potential to flow enough to sustain higher outputs and higher RPMs, and
match with the calculated responses.
Match with the turbo, what can sustain higher RPMs and higher boost levels.
Well, I suppose Jim's car is a track car, right? And he wants to go around the track, with it, right? Yeah. So he's not interested. Did you see that comment?
Mini performance says 500.
He reckons 500 horsepower. Interesting.
I think we need to give a quick primer too. For those of you who don't know, this gentleman has an alloy A-series block that has additional main bearings. If I remember, correct me if I'm saying anything wrong.
Yeah.
And so you're giving and spreading out that load from the crankshaft onto more bearings, meaning it's more reliable and stronger. But the block itself is also an alloy as opposed to these heavy, you know, just what are they, cast iron, steel? I don't know.
Iron.
Heavy. Iron. Yeah. Iron. So
yeah.
Heavy and rusty.
So I suppose, do you think is it all out power he wants to go for, or do you think it's more like sustainable power? I think sustainable.
I don't know if he needs any more power.
Yeah.
I think he makes close to 300 horsepower as it is on his old engine.
Is that in why in one of the photographs there's a massive box of broken gears? Is that what that is?
I think that was bits from the Bram Thatch Mini Festival where it almost finished, but not quite.
Yes.
Lost my light. Damn, yeah, motion sensor light.
It's interesting, isn't it? Yeah.
To really unleash the full potential of it, I think you need a different, and then K heads are good, but I think you'd be able to make 350 horsepower on it, but I think if you wanted to, for some stupid reason, you wanted to make 500 horsepower, you'd need a head that flows more than they do, or that they have the potential to do, I would say.
What do you think of the fact that KAD are talking now about making a head specifically for that block, or are in the, I don't know, either are in the world of making it or are going to make it, I think.
Yeah, well, if anyone can do it, they're the guys out there. They already do a 16 valve head, don't they? Yeah, you need bigger valves and you need more airflow to support 500 horsepower than you'll get from them K-heads. But I mean, do you need 500 horsepower? If you've still got a mini gearbox, let's face it, you don't want 500 horsepower, do you?
No, not even a little bit. That actually, there's a question from Connor here in the chat. Connor is one of our contacts at HEL. What kind of modifications are required to the gearbox in a 300 horsepower mini versus a 200 horsepower mini? And are there, hope, prayers?
Huge amounts of hope.
the power of the Lord.
Yeah, praying regularly. Buddha could be involved as well. I believe, can have input on this. Money, yes, for more gear kits.
Yeah, I genuinely don't think that there is a good way to, even at 200 horsepower, I mean, you're pushing that gearbox, even with, you know, maybe straight cut gears or the heavy duty helical set that Mini Spares has. And straight cut drops, I think you're really just kind of pushing it past the limit. I don't know what you guys think about that.
Some of the issues with the gear casing as well, just the breaking in the center web and stuff. If somebody, the nice man that designed the 5-port billet engine there, if he could just design a nice gearbox casing,
yes.
I think that was a bit beefier. That would be a good start. And then, a wider gear set like the Mini Spares helical that actually has a wider tooth on it, like the Swifty dog box and stuff, they're all wider gears. Yeah,
basically maximize that width as much as you can.
There was talk of a guy who was getting a casing done and he was going to move the differential like 25 mil down the box, and this was going to give the ability to get that really wide gear, like, you know, being a modern kind of car. Can't remember where I've seen it, maybe on Facebook or somewhere, but I never seen it come of it. I wonder, could you like hog one out of aluminium with one of them CNC machines? I wonder. Sounds like a lot of work.
I'd imagine, well, when you see what he's putting to that block and the crank and all the other bits to do with it, I could imagine he could knock a gearbox casing in a couple of days.
five grand gearbox casing. The block of aluminium is like £1,000 probably just to get that on its own.
And there's the other issue, isn't it? How much do you really want to spend either improving your A series or pretty much starting again with that? It isn't an A series, is it? Really, it's cool. Yeah. You know, as an engineering exercise, I think it's brilliant, and I'd love to see it run and do well. But it isn't an A series, is it?
Inspired by an A series, but
yeah, what's the difference?
I think progressively being able to bring in the power probably is the best way of protecting the box, right? If you can get the power to come in slowly rather than in one big lump, you've got a chance.
Yeah, or again, going back to like ECUs, and you could have a gear-dependent boost level and stuff like that. So you can do that with wheel speed sensors and can calculate what gear you're in. And obviously, it's not going to give you £20 in first gear when you're just launching and stuff. It's going to give you whatever, half that or whatever, and then it's going to bring the boost in later. And yeah, that's all beneficial. I guess that's what the Metro did in like a really crude manner with the factory ECU, where is it limited boost to like 4 PSI below 4,500 revs, and then brought the extra 3 PSI in above that to try and limit the mid-range torque on the gear.
How is that? Is that controlled with an electronic boost controller? And
yeah, that's what the Metro ECU has. Really, and just a really basic ECU and like a solenoid bleed valve kind of thing. Operated that off RPM, just bled
that's
off
pretty
some
clever.
Of the signal to the actuator after 4,500 RPM to give you that extra little 3 PSI, which was
really clever.
Just to limit the mid-range torque. Yeah, I mean, that was whatever it was, 1983 or something, wasn't it? So pretty simple, but with modern stuff, it's leagues ahead of that, isn't it?
Yeah. We were talking about knock earlier. I wonder, you know the way you were saying, Cole, that your ECU has space in it for a signal in for the lambda. Do you reckon, is that it? Is there just one signal left in, or is there still room for another
signal?
So
with this ECU, it's the S40i from DTA Fast. So it is an ignition-only ECU. I'm still running the turbo carb, but it doesn't have all the sensors that you might see on a more full and complete ECU. I think the no knock detection, the new one may have it, but I'm not totally certain. But lambda, crank position, throttle position sensor, if you want to use that, map sensor, and then the coil pack control and all of that. So
I wonder, has it got an output?
Possibly.
Yeah, because it'd be interesting to see with even that style of ECU. Because I think, am I right in saying, Phil, the Megajolt had output? I think it did, didn't it? You could do an RPM output. It was most people used it with a shift light, I think, didn't they?
Yeah, the switchable. I think there's like four channels on it.
Yeah,
You can use them for whatever you want.
You could do the same then as the kind of Metro system. You could bleed off boost then, and
you could have it open. You could have it open a solenoid. Yeah, you can use them for whatever you want. They just outputs just to earth. Just puts a ground, just a switch ground. So you can have a pump for an intercooler sprayer or your water meth, or switch a solenoid or. Yeah. Put some fairy lights on around your wing mirrors or whatever you want.
Yeah, 20 PSI of boost and knock fairy lights, come on.
that actually, so all based all off of the RPM signal then. That's
I think you can use, if you've got the map version as well, I think you can use a load sight as well to trigger stuff. You
probably can.
I'm pretty sure you can put a load output, so you could have it just triggering something under a certain boost. Like your intercooler sprayer, for example, you probably don't want that spraying at an RPM. It's more boost dependent, isn't it?
That
would be a slightly better option. I'm pretty sure you can have either or with that.
That actually, so one of our viewers, Callum Rawson, actually asked, this is kind of in line with what we're talking about right now. What ECUs do you recommend and don't you recommend? I feel like there's a lot of options out there for the Mini these days, some that are more feature rich that kind of plug and play, nothing's really bolt on. and then some that aren't. What ECUs do you like?
Well, the world's your oyster with stuff like that, isn't it? There's so much option. It depends how much you want to spend on it and what features you want. I mean, mm-hmm. I just run the Mega Jolt, which by today's standards is pretty primitive, but it was probably about at least 15 years ago when that was fitted. And for what I paid for it, I think I paid about 50 quid for it.
Wow.
Went to the scrapyard, pulled a trigger wheel off a Sierra and some leads off a Fiesta or something, and grafted it on in a weekend.
That's crazy.
It cost me literally about 80 quid all in, I think. And for what it cost me, it's light years ahead of a distributor.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to be nothing compared to like something that's, I don't know, like £1,000 now or whatever. Excuse me.
Yep.
I think ECU-wise, the as you say, there's like a million different ones out there, but the thing that seems to be the crux of all of them seems to be functionality. Like I see Turbo Cooper Sport just put in there that S40i version doesn't have those outputs that we were talking. Well, I think it's outputs he was talking about. It doesn't have it. Like, this seems to be something that you have to be very careful with, because like, you know, that ECU that you bought, Cole, and that package, it's not cheap. Like it certainly ain't no 50-pound ECU. And you kind of, it unnerves me a little bit about, it's probably a firmware thing, isn't it? It's probably something like it's just inside on the board. Like,
yeah, so it's not pinned maybe. I know that it does have RPM output for sure, but
yeah, to give you like a shift light or whatever.
Exactly. But some things, but you kind of get what you are looking for. You know, I think the DTA has a relatively good amount of support for it. There are some mini maps out there that are available. I'm putting together my own that I'll be sharing. And then, you know, those types of things that can kind of help people get going on them. But you almost need to spend some time to understand what you want out of an ECU, whether you want manifold pressure, you want to manage things with a crank position sensor, maybe a cam sensor, you want that. You want detonation or knock sensing, all of these things. Like the DTA doesn't come with all of those, it comes with some of them.
Yeah.
Or you could go to Haltech and spend $1,400 on something that has everything under the moon, but then you have no support for it in the mini world because not a lot of people have done it.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's always those trade-offs.
Are you gonna use all the features? Everybody likes to have all these adjustable this and adjustable that. It's the same with like anything, isn't it? Your suspension and stuff. Unless you're a racer, you fit your suspension and you set it.
Yeah.
And it's there for years, isn't it?
It's the same, isn't it, with oil gauges? You know, I don't know how many minis out there have an oil temperature gauge in them. And if you ask the person who has a mini with an oil temperature gauge in it, what do you expect to see on there? They'll be like,
yeah, I've never looked at it.
it goes up.
It works, I think.
Yeah, it's like, but it's lovely. Do you see it? It's got Smith written on it, see? And it's black with the white writing.
Mm. Yeah. Do you have an oil cooler? Yeah. Does it have a thermostat attached to it? What? No.
What are you measuring? Why are you measuring this temperature?
Yep, exactly. And like,
'cause I can.
And that's exactly it with this build. I don't have every bell and whistle on it, but I have the things that I feel like are necessary and enough to get me going and driving in a reliable way. At least that's the hope.
Yeah. If you buy an off the shelf thing that you've bought, that's might be considered relatively simple, but it's off the shelf, you've got the support there and there's not too much to go wrong. You'd hope, wouldn't you? There'll be a proper manual. You just wire it how it is and it should function, and there's not too much to set up and there's not too much, oh, is that right? Is this wrong? Is this going to affect this? It's more just put it on, set this, set that, and right, and hope that the way we go kind of thing, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
You get something with all the bells and whistles. If you're not going to use them, you've wasted your money. If you are going to use them, you either need to know what you're doing or you're paying someone to do it. And is it going to be any better at the end of the day for driving around the streets? Is it? Do you really need all these things if you're not going to race it or whatever?
They get so complicated that like you log into the software to like do something, and it's so complex in there that your mind just goes on fire trying to fit. Well, mine does. Like I had one of those 7-port engines here a while ago with you know, it was an Omex ECU on it, and I downloaded the software, and like, it was, you know, like I felt like I needed to learn some sort of computer programming code to, like, you know,
what voltage is this sensor just sending at this time? 0.3 volts, and then it's like,
yeah, and it was complex stuff. Like, and there was like 12 different iterations of a map that it could jump between, and you're like, you know, if you adjust this one, do you want it to adjust all the rest of this map based on that value? And then this is like, oh my god, I tried very gently to unplug my laptop from it and hope to fuck nothing I did saved to the ECU. And then got in and turned the key and went, please start, please start. Oh, it starts. Fine. So I reckon the only thing I could do in there was damage, you know. So, but you know, you look at I have loads of those megajolts out there, and you know, you can open those up on your laptop, and you know, if you spend 5 minutes rattling around in there, you can figure it out like in a flash exactly how it all operates. And you know, it's simple. Yeah,
it's pretty basic, but just what it says on the tin.
Yeah, but also simple is easy to diagnose as well when it's not doing what it says on the tin. You know, you can be like, okay, we don't have a crank signal, or we don't have a map signal, or whatever it is, or no voltage, or whatever. But like some of these other ECUs, it's like one little tweak and everything changes, and then you don't know where you are. You know?
It's going to do what most people want as well for like minis and what have you, isn't it? It's not like you're running 1,000 horsepower, whatever, six cylinder, something super trick. It's, and if you've still got your carb on, obviously you're running that, it's going to do, unless you're pushing or you're really expecting to push quite hard and, you know, looking for like well beyond 200 horsepower or whatever, and you're going to be possibly running into trouble, it's going to do what you need, really. I mean, if unless you're racing and stuff, and I've never had any issues with it, and just running it on the street, it's been super reliable. Like you say, it's simple. You put the map up. There's only a few things to alter. You can alter your rev limit, and you can use your few outputs. And there's just not much to go wrong with it. And I think most people with minis and stuff, they just want to. They're mostly road cars, aren't they? And like people just want to bob around and it just do the job, really.
I mean, yeah, zip around.
How much adjustability do you need? Unless you really, like say, pushing the limits, or you do race or something, or you're running fuel injection, and obviously you need all the things there, but. Keep it simple, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Which is exactly why none of us recommend doing a turbo to your car. Just keep it simple.
Yeah. Oh, yes, I guess. Yeah, because, you know, it's not like minis themselves have like 500 million different variations of problems that can just crop up from, you know, bolting standard off the shelf parts on. You know, that never happens. No, never. All Colt's getting packages. Is that your starter motor? Looks very light. Connor Chappell asks a question here. Speaking of bells and whistles, what does your preferred whoosh noise sound like? I suppose that's like, what kind of wastegate have you got, huh?
Have you got yours?
Or not wastegate. What am I talking about? Dump valve.
Blow off valve. It needs to be loud enough to at least scare small children. Otherwise, there's nothing in it, is there?
Yeah. Or you know, we could go all the way and have wastegate as well. You know, I see a lot of those guys with like, you know, a wastegate separate,
turbo,
right? And and they have like a little pipe sticking out of their bonnet or something like that.
I'm not sure how legal it is for street use.
I'm pretty sure it's just to scare children, right?
Come to the US and you whatsoever. Can do kind of whatever you want to do with cars.
Same in Ireland. Yeah, it's fine here. Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
Policeman so asks you, no, what's your waste? What is a wastegate? What is that? You know, is your car older than 30 years? Yes. Do what you like. Goodbye. Yeah. I know this because my Land Rover is legally on the road right now, and it definitely shouldn't be.
So I am sorry to say, you asked me if it was the starter that was getting delivered. It was not. It was a whole bunch of rolls of Tessa tape from electrical wiring. Yeah. Equally as exciting.
You're going to need that when your wiring loom goes on fire, so that's good.
Listen here, buddy.
Well, you're trying to make your DAT wiring loom look OE, right? You're just going to wind all the Tessa tape look red.
Perfectly OEM. Well, we are at kind of the top of the hour now, which is a perfect time to transition us into our official Q&A segment. And want to make a quick announcement about that. So the way that we run these Q&A segments, and then it won't be any different today, everybody can ask questions. We're going to do our best to share those questions on stream and answer as much as we can, depending on how many we're getting in. If you guys want a guaranteed answer, feel free to consider donating on the Super Chat. That helps us run these live streams in the future, pay for this streaming software, and have lots of other guests like the wonderful Turbo Phil join us. So ask your questions away.
There's no questions. Let's leave. Bye.
Yep. All right. See you guys.
Good live stream. See you all soon. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Well, we already answered one while you were getting your Tessa tape.
Oh, did you now?
Yeah, we did. Yeah. We said what our favorite whooshing noise was.
Oh, I like the pigeon noises. I'm not gonna. Yeah, or you have a you recircuit, or you don't even have a recirc. You just let the excess go into the intake system, right? Is that how that works? And then it adds like a certain amount of back pressure to the turbo. Maybe Phil is like cringing over there as I'm poorly explaining this.
I missed a bit of that. What are we talking about? Recirculating dump valves now.
Yeah, or rather, the getting those pigeon noises, so it would be like not having a blow-off valve, right?
Noise. That's a compressor surge, then. Mm-hmm. Do the sound again. I enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, happy to do that anytime. I'm like a cat.
the chirping sound, then. Yeah, he's when the compressor goes into surge, when you shut your throttle and the air backs up, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And against the compressor wheel because it's got nowhere to vent off. Yeah.
Yeah. See, is that how damaging is that to a turbo?
can be. Yeah, loads of bearings and the shaft. It'll depend what kind of RPM it's spinning at and stuff. But I guess if it's enough to cause the chirping sound, it's not ideal.
Some people it just love it. It sounds good. It's fine.
But there's guys, you know, with all these GTI Golfs and all, trying to get that to happen. They want that to happen. Like, you know, they'll actually put a valve in their intake that closes when they lift off the throttle, so it'll make that sound. You're like,
yeah, okay. They obviously want to change the turbo on a fairly regular basis, I imagine.
Yep. Yeah, well, it's getting easy to do that because you can't get genuine GT17s anymore. I just buy the aftermarket ones, and you know when they start making weird noises, just check it in the bin and get another one.
I mean, the Metro didn't have any blow-off valve or anything, it's only running low boost, and it's quite a big turbo, so it obviously was considered that it wouldn't be an issue.
Wasn't there that little teeny valve? I think I asked you about this the other day. That was built into the intake plenum. That spring was like a fake blow-off valve.
Yeah, that's an overboost protect. That's actually it's protection for any kind of overboost situation occurs. That little plastic plunger and spring opens and vents off.
Yeah,
but it should never vent off, other than the issue of an overboost, like a fault or a pipe comes off or whatever, and you get an overboost situation. So that was their built-in kind of safety feature.
There's actually a couple questions. I do want to mention. Someone asked when my map would become public and how much it would cost. I'm not selling this. This is a public map that I'm sharing. I posted a link in the chat as well. I'm going to be updating that as I update the map on my car. It's going to be free. It is a cost to me, but I just wanted to share it with you guys. But one big disclaimer is it is made for my car, not for every car. So it is not something that you can just plug and play. I cannot stress that enough, that it could be helpful for you as a place to start and then get your car tuned. Don't expect it to be like, upload this map, car works perfectly. I'm not Unitronic over here with these Volkswagens. This is very rudimentary. But yeah, I wanted to answer that question. Yeah, I know.
With the hundreds and hundreds of hours of driving and testing you've done, cool. You don't have this map dialed.
What? It's crazy, I know.
I'm pretty sure I seen you push Bad Wolf out of the garage the other day. I'm back in again.
That's true. That's at least 3 miles, you know, in the US spec of miles.
Yeah. In mini spec, because mini miles are like dog life years. 1 mile in a mini is equivalent to, it's actually 7, you know, because they seem to wear like that anyway. That's for sure. Yeah. For certain. Every single component seems to wear like that's the thing. You know, the way you say, well, your dog might live to be 15. Well, yeah, that's the same for a mini. It might be 40 years old, but it'll actually only do 10,000 miles. Anyway, there we go. There's my mini rant for today.
Get ready, Phil. We have some pretty technical questions rolling in. Maybe Paul, do you want to pick the first one? Can you see all of them?
I think I might have missed one or two, but let's do the max boost on a 1275. A stock 1275. What do you reckon?
Compression ratio dependent for starters. Also, A plus or A series. The A plus pistons are better than the A series.
Mm-hmm. More cocoa.
Are you gonna run the stock ignition? What carb are you gonna run? It's a how long's a piece of string kind of question, isn't it? If it was a stock 1275 A plus, and it was like the 9.4:1 compression, and you were gonna set the max advance on the ignition timing to something sensible.
So many disclaimers.
And then, is it standard gearbox? Because diff pin doesn't
matter. How many miles? What size tires have you got? How much pressure have you got in them? Are you running standard fuel or not? Come on, Phil. Tell us how many PSI. How do you not know this shit? 100 pounds. It'll be fine.
Well, you're talking about the guy before. Gavin Wilkinson is running like whatever 10:1 compression and a bar of boost.
Yeah, but is that like on a stock MPI? Like,
I think it's stock MPI engine, but he's running aftermarket fuel injection and ignition control.
Yeah, but like a stock MPI bottom end. Wow, well done him.
Yeah, valves and everything.
He must have found the only one that they put together correctly. God damn, can't keep absolutely standard ones of them on the road. Like,
and then you can buy the aftermarket supercharger kits, can't you, to basically bolt onto your standard engine. They run like 10 PSI. They do stick a decompression plate in, don't they?
Yeah. If you go that route.
Yeah. Cole's going to tell you, he could tell you all about them. They're phenomenal, I believe. Yeah.
Uh-huh, worked great.
Yeah.
It's running it right now.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I love, by the way, you won't have seen this, Phil. Phil can't see the comments, I don't think, but Connor Chappell, a mutual friend of ours, reckons your cough sounds like his mini. Or his mini sounds like your cough. I don't know.
I've been dying this week, yeah.
Oh, you poor dude, yeah. Aw, poor Phil.
You couldn't see what Paul was doing just now, but he was patting your head through the camera.
Are you better now? Is that it? Cured. I know. See? You always get the loaves and hugs from Ireland.
I'm definitely not going to cough again.
No, that's not fixed. Yeah, you're welcome.
Yep.
All righty then, Coley, hit the man with another question.
Okay. Since you did not give us a PSI number, I'm going to let you slide, but any recommendations for knock sensing? I'm only aware of a knock shield for Arduino made by Byland Automotive. Many thanks. That's from Pascal.
Yes. Well, that's another thing I have for mine. Unless you've got an ECU that's capable with it built in. I've got one by a company called Notlink.
Notlink or N-O-T?
Knock.
Got it.
but again, that's not something I've actually run yet, as it's in the huge pile of bits sat next to my car. But that's after research, that's one I went for. I think that's a UK-based company, that.
I popped that in the chat there so people could Google that. Thank you for that recommendation.
So yeah, I've got that, but I haven't actually done any testing with it, so I couldn't tell you how good it is. But I do know someone that's, well, I actually know two people that have used the Mod Minis and had success with them, so I'm presuming I should have same
Thanks
success.
Thanks for sharing that, Phil. I might actually have a go looking at one of them myself, because it's something that might deter my forged pistons from ending up in the gearbox. That would be something I'd be very interested in.
Just don't put the pistons in the gearbox. Problem solved.
You reckon? No need for no knock link at all. Yeah, yeah. All right. I'll try that the next time.
You have to kind of tune it in so it listens for certain frequencies. So you need to run your engine in a known condition where you know it for sure that it's not knocking.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say I needed to run it in a knock state, because I was going to say it seems to be really good at that. That's not a problem. I can achieve that easy. I just have to do 3 laps of the track, and it seems to it's really good at doing it that way.
Okay, so it monitors the engine in a known safe condition, and it monitors the frequencies that the engine sees in a safe situation, and then it'll then look for frequencies outside that range when it's monitoring, and then anything it sees outside what it knows is like a safe frequency, it'll show up as knock.
Does that get wired into your megajolt system, or is
it... No, it's just a standalone unit, so it lights up and it's got a sounder and stuff on it.
And so when you see it, then you start, you know, sweating bullets and let off the throttle.
Yeah, that's the idea.
Checking your wallet. 8 more years in the garage for you.
it's not going to be as effective as one that's wired through your ECU that can actually back off the timing or whatever, or chuck a bit more fuel in or whatever.
Mm-hmm. That actually kind of brings us into another question here from Ewan. He says, what do you consider a safe range for lambda AFR for forced induction? I can answer that, or you can answer that. You know, if you have I could start with my thought of what I hope is good. I feel like you kind of lean on the air of richness, don't you? You know, kind of in the 12.7 area. What do you think?
Richer,
really?
Yeah. 12 under boost. It's not going to be overly rich, and it's a bit safer.
I'm going to write these notes down here. Just don't mind me.
I actually did a little bit on my some of the NA stuff. Like, typically speaking, with a lambda, I found that obviously. Because we read lambda at the Y piece generally, or in the turbo, it's after the turbo in a boosty situation. The figure you get isn't actually a true representation of what is happening across the cylinders. Obviously, as we've figured this out over the years because of A series engines and their lovely ability to fuel completely differently across their cylinders, typically speaking, even on normally aspirated motors, at full chat, I'm perfectly happy with 11:1. Like, I've never seen any decrease in power anyway at all.
Like you say, like you say, it's measuring the all cylinders, so it is just an average of all cylinders, isn't it? If you've only got the one in your downpipe or whatever. You're going to see discrepancies across the cylinders. I was watching a thing with a dyno test the other day, actually, where the guy was testing air fuel ratios, and he tested, I think, from about 13 to 1 all the way down to about 9.5 to 1 before the engine would just misfire from overly rich. The power that he actually lost till it started to misfire. So from about 13 to 1 to about 10 to 1, it didn't misfire at 10 to 1. There was hardly any power loss in it. But obviously you will get ball washing and stuff when you get down to that kind of level. But there was no real... It overlaid all the graphs and there was no real... It was minimal power difference.
If you can check your COs and you can check your fuel ratio and you're seeing half reasonable, you know, COs and seeing even at 11 to 1, maybe you would be very concerned if it was ticking over at 11 to 1 because of bore washing and stuff like that. but if it's a full chat and it's giving you 11.5 or 12 to 1, I wouldn't worry about that at all. You're not gonna see any problem. Your fuel consumption will go up, but it'll be safe as houses.
What's COs? I don't think I have ever had to measure that here.
So yeah, CO is a measurement of what's coming out the exhaust. It's carbon dioxide,
monoxide.
The nasty one. But typically speaking, they go up the more you are unburning your fuel, I think. Isn't that right?
I see. So the more fuel that is making it out your exhaust pipe unburned, the higher your COs would be.
Yeah, because I think it's to do with it's a nasty gas made by unburned fuel, right? Something to do with that. I know they don't like it anyway in all the MOT and test centers and stuff. They don't like it when it's high. They like it to be low. HC is really the proper one. If you can measure hydrocarbons, that's the one. That's the real good one. If you can measure HCs, that'll literally tell you how much unburned fuel is in your exhaust, right? So
if you run too lean as well, though, your hydrocarbons go up because it doesn't combust properly. So when you see people saying, "Oh, for the MOT, just lean it off," it doesn't always work. Your hydrocarbons go up, and then it won't pass the hydrocarbons because it's not actually there's not actually enough fuel in there to cause a proper combustion.
That's where you'll see your COs through the roof then as well, right? They'll be like 7 or 8 or something like that, some bananas number like that.
Yeah, so it's getting that point, isn't it? It's not just a matter of, let's make it as lean as possible. That doesn't work.
Yeah, it doesn't work. Yeah. So I suppose it's a good combination.
You guys are just making me so happy that we're totally exempt from inspection here past a certain age of car. Yeah, after 25 years, it's like, does it have a bumper, headlights, and a windshield? All right, you passed.
well done, you. And the windshield was absolutely voluntary. You just won't have stuff in your teeth now. Nice.
Yeah. I don't want bugs in my face.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah. Let's see. We've kind of caught up with most of the questions here.
We have.
Let's see here. Oh, there was a question earlier by Lewis that says, any cost estimated, presumably for a turbo build in general? a lot? Not a little?
Many.
What kind of output. Depends what you're trying to achieve, doesn't it, really?
Yeah. If you can get away with cheap parts and stuff if you don't mind it breaking. Want to slap some stuff on there.
Or if you only want a small gain, if you're only looking to like boost it a small amount and just give it a bit more torque and you're not wanting to make mega power out of it, you can use a lot of the relatively standard parts because you're not adding a huge amount of power increase to it, are you? So it depends what your target is. If you wanted 200 horsepower plus, then it's going to cost you a lot of money.
Yeah, considerably more.
Yeah, but if you've got a standard 1275 that's whatever 70 horsepower and you wanted to make it 90 horsepower or whatever, 100 horsepower, it's probably not going to cost you a right lot. Get some old petrol turbo bits on, and as long as it's in decent condition and you set it up properly, it's got to be close to 100 horse, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, I think that's probably accurate. I mean, you just kind of you put the original stock parts that were available on it. That works to an extent. You'll get some power out of it and get some fun.
Yeah, it's all right. I mean, one of the
sorry,
best.
Sorry, yeah, we're the same.
We're speaking to each other.
Watch up. Go.
One of the best fun engines I've run was probably when I originally turboed mine, and it was like relatively standard. I don't know whether it was just because I went from a 998 to about 100 horsepower with a standard turbo engine, but it was really nice to drive. Standard compression, and it was just a standard engine running like 7 psi, but it started on the button. You could potter around in it. There was no real lag because the compression was quite high. It was smooth. You went up and down the gears. It just pulled really clean, just as like the factory intended, you know. It was a pleasure to drive. I drove that, did a lot of miles on that engine. Once you start dropping the compression and putting bigger turbos on and then putting higher lift cams and stuff in, yeah, it's great when it's going, but it kind of isn't as fun going through town and stuff, and it's like chugging away more and you having to use the gearbox more, and it's like noisier, and it's just not civilized. And that standard engine was just brilliant. Yeah, it's just like driving a standard 1275, but then when you put your foot down, it had that bit more go, you know. And it was just really nice. It just depends what you want from your car, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think that's a really good kind of conclusion. I think so many people out there get caught in this rat race, don't they? Of they think they want a 200 horsepower A series turbo mini because they've read a line on a forum or a picture on or Facebook or something like that. And you actually have to sit down and ask yourself, why are you turbocharging this car? Are you turbocharging it to make it a bit more peppy and to, do you do 500 miles to a show? If you do, then you don't want a 200 horsepower A series. If you want to have, you know, an A series that goes down the quarter mile in, you know, whatever speed or whatever time, then yeah, fine. Then maybe you do want, you know, your 200 horsepower mini. So I suppose, yeah, you've got to ask yourself the question, what you want, don't you?
Mm-hmm. And I think there's this notion, you know, when you read that one line that's on the forum of somebody who's like, getting to that 200 horsepower more point, you're kind of almost, you're also not seeing the 4 years of time that they have spent before that, kind of building up to that, you know, point, and nickel and diming themselves throughout that whole process.
yeah, exactly, totally. I think that really. Yeah, is it pub talk horsepower you want or drivability? Which is it? That's what you've got to ask yourself. I think I'm very interested to see how your build goes, Cole. I think you have, I'd say, as modest a, you know, turbo build as, you know, because you built that as a supercharger, really, and now you're just gonna put turbo on it. I think that's going to drive really nicely, and you've gone for a really good quality intercooler and a really nice turbo, and I think that build there is going to be the most roadable turbo setup out there. I think that's,
God, I hope so.
I really do think it will be. Yeah, I do think it will be. I think where the line of development you may end up going on that car to make it more roadable is be to try and make it come on boost earlier. I think that's the only place you're probably, you know, your next level of tune. I think that's what you're going to be interested in. But you may well actually just surprise us all and say, you know what, this thing pulls from 1800 revs and I'm happy as a camp.
Yeah, I'll maybe Turbofill can fit me in the schedule when I want to redo the head.
Yeah. I've only been trying to get him to fit me in for like God only knows. So no, yeah. God damn you, you're not getting ahead for me. Oh. How long is the waiting list now, Phil? Is it 6 months now?
Decades.
Yeah, measured in light years. it's good. You must be doing something right.
Yep.
Doing my best. Sure.
All right. Will we answer one more question then, and then we'll try and wrap it up?
Yeah. So we're kind of reaching the top of the 90-minute segment here. So got a few questions left in here. And there's a lot of good questions left here. This is tough. You pick one, Paul. I don't want to be the bad guy.
Oh, I can't see them all.
Oh no. Okay. Paul.
Go on. You ain't even in your money, Mo.
Yeah. What do you think? This is from James Hewer. What do you think the horsepower limit is to keep the kind of original drivability that you mentioned before, Phil? What is the
sweet spot?
The sweet spot, the unicorn horsepower figure.
They seemed, well, turbo, they seemed to go nicely, about 150 horsepower, really.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can keep the compression sensible. The reliability is there.
As there as it's going to be.
Yeah.
I love nobody will ever say reliability. They'll say there'll be some. It'll be measurable.
I think once you start pushing past that, yeah, it's fun, but there's always the chance, more chance of things breaking. Mm-hmm. You've got to build it to take that. So you've got to be monitoring temperatures all that. If I drive mine and I'm caning it, I've always got an eye on the oil pressure gauge. I've always got an eye on the wide band. I've always got an eye on the rev counter, and then any spare eyes are on the road. when the more standard it is, I mean, when like that one, hark back to that one I was talking about before, when it was standard, you just got it and you drove it and you didn't worry about things breaking because it never felt like it was going to. Always just felt happy, and it never got hot when you caned it and stuff. It just
well balanced.
Yeah, you start turning more boosted. It's always in the back of your head, or it does get hot anyway. Just the nature of the thing. You're running 15-20 psi. It's going to get hot unless you've got a front mounted radiator or whatever. I've always found if you prolong periods, it builds up. Take it around the track for an entire afternoon and it not get hot.
Yeah. That's really interesting. That has always been my power figure. I'm really glad you say that, because that has always been the kind of the power figure I was aiming for. Steve over there, Turbo Cooper Sport, keeps saying, well, your engine can take 200 horsepower probably. And I'm like, but then I'm like, do I want that? I don't know.
It can and it will, but how long for, and how long do you want it to last? How often do you want to rebuild it, basically?
Yeah, I don't really.
I've always seen this great comparison between Turbo A Series and NA, where it seems to be about 50 horsepower. What an NA engine does at a 50 horsepower or less seems to be very much mashable. Like, if you ask me what a really good NA horsepower figure to go for in an everyday mini, I'd say 100. If you went for 100, you'd have a lovely, reliable everyday mini that would pull like a little train and would just be really enjoyable to drive. And like you say, Phil, you're not going to look at the oil pressure gauge every 2 seconds and, you know, look at the temperature gauge every 3 minutes. Like, you're going to be able to just drive it and give it a good hard day. And yeah, put 50 horsepower on that with boost and you get the same kind of thing. And the same then would go. 150 horsepower A series engine is just right at its limit all day, every day, which is basically what a 200 horsepower turbo mini is going to be, right? It's going to be the same thing. So,
yeah, like you say, yeah. You could, for your normally aspirated engine, you could run a pretty streetable cab and stuff, couldn't you? Once you start getting past the 100 horsepower mark, you're getting into race profiles and all leads, like semi race profiles, aren't you?
Yeah, everything just starts. Everything just starts to, it's all sacrifice drivability and reliability for that extra 5 horsepower, that extra 10 horsepower. And I think in boost it's going to be the same, isn't it? Once you go over 150, you start getting into weird cam profiles again, really hogged out cylinder heads, big turbos, lots of boost, lots of heat.
Lots of change.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And money and expense. Yeah. But yeah, let's see. So yeah, that was really interesting, Phil. And thank you very much for spending so much time with us and giving us such good information. It's fantastic to have somebody with so much knowledge out there sharing it and getting it out on the yeah, it's a huge addition to our live streams. Hopefully on the next time we have you on, we'll be able to live stream onto your channel as well now, hopefully, and get that information out there to even more.
I am going to post a link to your channel in the chat. So anybody who is on this, if you are not subscribed, and I said this earlier, head over and subscribe. He has a wonderful channel.
Get over there. Yeah.
He's almost to 1,000 subscribers. Let's bring him over it.
Yeah, yeah. Let's get Phil over 1,000. Come on, guys. Let's do this. Let's get him up there. Phil is just such a top class guy. He is a wonderful member of our mini community and somebody who is always out there helping. His website, turbominis.com as well, has some absolutely phenomenal information on there about anybody that's trying to get into turbo and trying to learn turbo. Again, you know, another guy who's got a website up there that's costing them money, and he's putting that information out there, FOC, so a bit of support. Mm-hmm. Is always good, and thank you very much for supporting us in our live chat. It's great to have you here.
No bother. Thank you.
Yeah. We'll definitely have you back again.
Yes. Anything you'd like to share with the viewers before we sign off here? Any big projects or things you're trying to share right now?
Well, I hope when I get some time, I'll bang a few more videos up of stuff that I'm doing. But yeah, it's just time limited, same as most people really. Everyone works as a family and etc. But yeah, I've got stuff going on. It's just probably best to follow me on Facebook. I'll bang a few pictures up there, as it's obviously a lot easier than doing a full video. But I'm trying to create more.
You've been doing a few lives over on Facebook now. Once you get over your 1,000 subscribers, I suppose they're going to wind their way to YouTube, maybe, are they?
Yeah, you know, it's quite easy to do that because obviously I can just work and just set the camera up and just crack on. And that's easier than making a video, then editing it, and then uploading it, and then the rest of it, you know. So
to see the raw, the real like work that you're doing, which is really cool.
My dirty hands.
Wonderful. Yeah, I'm sure Paul's hands are dirty just from sitting in his garage. I keep my garage clean. Thank you.
Yeah, mine are perpetually filthy. Yeah.
I decided to take the comfy chair tonight. I was going to go in the garage, but
I do work in my garage, Cole. It's, it's a different thing, you know.
Listen, bud. Yeah, I've got my comfy chair as well. This is my back.
Oh, nice. Nice.
It's a wash mitt. Yeah.
You've got, I was just going to say, you've gone up from last month's rolled up cushion and duct tape to.
Yeah, I need to get a comfortable chair.
Very good. Well, gentlemen, this has been great. I really enjoyed every bit of it. Thank you very much. And thank you very much to everybody who tuned in, who commented, who added a thumbs up or a like. Don't forget to do the thumbs up and like. They help these videos get out there and get other people to see them. So. Thank you very much. And if you're new and you're only seeing this, subscribe.
Yep. All those things.
All righty.
Thank you, guys. And cheers, guys. We will see you on the next one.